Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with the second tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search second tier in your podcast app
and hit subscribe.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that for the month of October pits two horror movies with lots in common in a fight to the death to see which one comes out victorious. That's right, it's our Halloween countdown that is
Shocktober.
This week in the red corner, the movie in the series that decided to do away with Michael Myers. But how do you replace such an icon of horror with not one, not two, but a whole season of Witchers? I'm pretty sure you won't be able to move for Witchers from 1982. Happy, happy Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. While in the blue corner, once you pop, you can't stop. A delicious new product hits the shelves of America, but all is not what it seems, and does this delicious goo have a more sinister motive? From 1985, enough is never enough. Enough is never enough of the stuff.
You don't really know much about Halloween. Halloween, the barriers will be down between the real and the unreal. And the dead might be looking in. The last great one took place 3,000 years ago when the hills ran red.
Halloween, the chill.
You happen to know anything about this Cochrane?
All I can tell you, mister, is watch out. He's watching you, friend, I guarantee you that.
The strip is here now. Great new day sensation. Light and free now. Get you elevation. Enough is never enough. Enough is never enough.
The stuff, the taste that makes you hungry for more.
The stuff,
the taste that delivers.
We interrupt this presentation with the following urgent message.
Tonight, America is in grave danger.
So it's a cautionary commercial quarrel this week, but which film is better? Let's find out together. Welcome to Clash of the Titles.
Shocktober!
Release the Kraken!
Hi, Clash Podders. I could do with a nap. Want to take one with me? I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crumpton.
I'm Chris.
So welcome to part one of Halloween 3, Season of the Witch versus The Stuff. If you are new to the show, this is how it works. We'll be doing Halloween 3 today and The Stuff on Thursday, at which point we'll declare which is the better film. So the clue Chris gave on last week's show was...
Vicky gave it.
It was
This time of year is so commercial, which I was shooting blind when I did that, but it turns out I was correct, so that's good.
You mean you hadn't seen the films at
and
this
I
point.
Had very little idea what
very
either
little.
Of them were about.
Okay.
Yeah. But it turns out it was a good clue, I think.
Well, shall we see?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, go on.
Chris, you followed it up on Twitter with...
Caveat emptor.
What does that mean?
Come on, Latin gang.
Oh, no, it
means that you take responsibility as the buyer for the products you purchase.
Yeah, buy beware.
Oh, wow. Mm. Amazing.
Yeah.
So what does caveat, why do we use that as the word caveat? Because it means like, not excuse, but do you know, it doesn't matter. It's fine. I thought the point of knowing Latin was that you go, well, the root of that is therefore that.
Caveat emptor means buyer beware.
You just said that. Mm. It's fine.
That's what it means.
Sorry. All right. Carry on.
Okay.
People got the films.
They
just didn't get them against each other.
Yeah.
Wow,
so
okay.
Your prize this week is nothing. You get nothing. No winner this week. It's been a while.
In fairness, you could have gone, the clue is Halloween something versus the something, and still people might have struggled, I think.
Well, I'm guessing a lot of our listeners have heard of or seen Halloween 3.
Yes.
And not as many have heard of or seen The Stuff.
Yeah.
It's an exciting week, though.
Right.
Exciting week. These films go together.
Alex was full of beans talking about these films at your wedding.
I had to stop myself.
By the way, congratulations, Vicky.
Thank you, guys.
Just to say, we were there.
You were there, yeah.
Living it like it's 2005. Jaeger bombs? What? What are people doing? What are your friends doing? No one drinks Jaeger bombs anymore.
And you should really just have one.
Not six.
As promised, though, I posted that nice photo of us on the special day.
Aww.
And you got lots of congratulations and well wishes from our listeners on social media.
Thanks,
a lot
everyone.
Of people loving the frock.
Thank you, everyone.
My mum wanted to ask if you got married in black.
I did.
You did?
Mm. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I didn't get changed. I'm not like that.
You're not. I mean, my mum knows that.
Yeah.
Does your mum disapprove?
No. She's very much the opposite.
She's, of course, economical-minded mum. Like, I'm not going to, like, waste money on two frocks.
Also, she doesn't have the highest opinion of marriage.
Wear what you want. Who cares?
Do it. Do it, V. Right then. So... shall we do the connection section? Adverts with catchy jingles, enough is never enough, and Halloween.
Yeah, I mean, you said on Saturday that you've never seen so many connections.
Yep, I've got what,
which
got
I'm
loads.
So happy about, because I wasn't sure when I came up with the pairing. I wasn't sure if they totally went together. And you watch me like, oh, hold on, it's just a remake, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's loads. Factories in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. Deserted small towns with factories in the middle of nowhere.
You get a factory tour. You've got a couple investigating who jump into bed quite quickly.
A man and a woman previously unknown to each other having a sexual relationship almost instantly and for the duration of the rest of their lives / film.
Specifically in a motel as well.
Motel hell.
Motel sex.
Petrol stations.
Mm. Company towns where the residents are all in league with the evil corporation.
So many.
The source of the evil is natural.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. Stonehenge.
Yeah.
It's a stone.
Yes,
it's a stone. Gooks coming from the earth. Yeah, sure. People who look like people but aren't people and are also kind of hollow apart from a bit of goo. Told you it was going to get specific.
That's all I've got, though.
Yeah, that's enough, though.
Heroes are turned off screen in pretty unfair fashion. Ellie and Charlie.
Oh, dear.
You know, what's going on with the pair of them? We'll get to it when we talk through both films, but it happens off screen and it's not really fair on either occasion.
Which one's which?
Charlie is cookie.
Chocolate chip Charlie.
Oh, yeah.
And Ellie's a heroine.
Yeah.
Of
they disappear and then come
the
back
other
and
film.
Then die.
Yes, that's right. She just dies.
Spoiler for Thursday. Yeah.
Both very badly marketed movies. They might have seen more success if they'd figured out how to sell these films.
Yeah, I got some quotes from our old friend Tommy Lee Wallace about that in Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. Right, then, on Thursday, Chris is getting stuffed, which means today, let's get ready to count those witches as I talk Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. Irresistible man Dr. Dan is busy drinking and having sex with every woman that comes within 2 feet of him, buying his kids the shittiest Halloween masks ever, and being interrupted in his sexathon by irate calls from his ex, Linda. Shut up, Linda! Just as it seems Dr. Dan has run out of women, Ellie turns up, and so they decide to go on a short sex holiday under the guise of trying to find out who killed her dad, yawn. After having some sex, they decide, while they're here, to visit that ominous factory in the John Carpenter town, TM. It's run run by bona fide Irish toy maker Conall Cochran, who has had the hilarious idea of killing all the children in America on Halloween as a prank. Dr. Dan ain't having this, and after running around rooftops for a bit, he escapes, has to murder a clockwork version of Ellie, considers having sex with it, then makes a phone call to get some ads taken off TV, which is apparently a thing. You just call Ad HQ and they take ads off every channel, but not in time, apparently. And the movie ends before we can see Connell appear on screen and say, punked. The end. So no witches, and indeed very few women who aren't trying to have sex with Dr. Dan.
No fucking witches.
No.
What the hell?
He says... Doesn't Connell say, I'm a witch?
Does it? Yeah, I'm not sure he is. Warlock? I'm giving him warlock.
Get have warlock.
You can be a wizard or a warlock.
Right, yeah, that's fair.
I'm not seeing a lot
and
of witch. Is,
when he was like, take the advert down, and I know it's a long time ago, I'd be like, but who are you talking
who?
To? But even in the script, they're like, and Dan rings. There's something there. So who is it?
Ad HQ.
Yeah.
Yeah, I pulled that directly from the screenplay. He's ringing Ad HQ, who have managed ads on multiple channels.
But not all of them.
Not all of them. No, they can't get through to the third one. I mean, they understand the rule of three.
It's amazing that they listen to him at all. It's yeah. good.
Yes, it is. Really amazing. Who are you? A crazy person ringing us telling kids are going to die.
Yeah, no one even knows we exist, Ad HQ. How have you got this number?
So let's do our individual histories with this movie. Mine's quick. First watch.
Yeah, me too. Never heard of it.
You never heard of Halloween 3?
No. I know okay. there's loads of them.
You knew
them.
Halloween 4 and 2. Yeah. Yeah. But you can work
so
backwards.
I inferred there was a third instalment, but the call on Season of the Witch was a surprise to me.
I watched them all when I was about 15, and this is sort of famously, or it certainly was at the time, the bad one, the disaster. And I watched it and thought, you know what, this is a lot more interesting than some of the Michael Myers films,
agreed.
Which are quite bloody boring.
Absolutely.
So I remember quite liking it, and I've not seen it since, but very much remember the song. I'm afraid you'll be remembering that for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
and the boy's death. That's really, really stayed with me.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think this film's got a lot going for it. And it has been reevaluated in recent years. And I think this has become something of a cult.
No, ooh. Don't say it. You know,
I might be into this.
Oh, hang
this
on.
Week.
Oh, wait.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
I'll say as to why as we go through.
Interesting, because we all know that you have a very strong opinion about the idea.
I'll say now, I don't think the stuff is a cult movie. But
okay. On. Gone early by a whole show this time. So yeah, this is a cult classic.
Okay.
As in, as you often say,
yeah.
Movies that were shit.
Yeah, at the time.
And then enough time's passed.
People have forgotten.
Yeah, they've forgotten. Right, then I'll tell you a little bit about it. Let's deal with this title first of all. This is the only explanation I can find for the title. Halloween 3 subtitle comes from George A. Romero's second film, Season of the Witch, from 1973. But the plot contains no similarity to Romero's story of a housewife who becomes involved in witchcraft.
Yeah, it's got nothing to do with that.
Hmm. That's what they say.
Why do they bother?
Look, Nigel Neal first wrote this. I'm guessing there was more witchcraft in his script.
Right.
Which was massively changed by two other people.
By more, you mean some.
Yeah.
Right.
I'll tell you a bit about his script. I'll tell you, first of all, John Carpenter and Deborah Hill only agreed to do Halloween 3 if it didn't focus on Michael Myers. The idea at the time was to create a horror anthology out of the Halloween movies, like The Twilight Zone, with a bigger scale, bigger budget, and each film released would focus on a different aspect of Halloween.
Which wasn't that mad at the time.
No.
Because we didn't have the template of sequels now where they all follow a through line. Mm. Back then, you had Carry On movies, you had James Bond movies, you had all kinds of franchises that didn't follow that very much single focus. So
I know the problem is that they'd done Halloween 2.
I know, if this had been Halloween 2, yes. We might have been fine.
Exactly, but the problem was they wanted to do this from Halloween 2, Hill and Carpenter, but the studio, obviously, because Halloween was such a hit, they wanted Myers back, and at one stage it became clear that Carpenter and Hill were going to lose any control over Halloween 2 unless they signed on as writers and accepted that Michael Myers had to be in it, which is why Michael Myers is in the sequel. Unfortunately, though, this movie wasn't a massive hit, and it put paid to the idea of doing an anthology. Good old Michael Myers was brought back for the fourth film, and to make sure everyone was clear, that was called The Return of Michael Myers after Halloween 3 Season of the Witch failed at the box office.
Right.
It's a long subtitle, but it makes it clear.
All this Michael Myers crap.
So you mentioned Nigel Neal. I've never seen the Quatermass TV show.
It's a film. Amazing. Right. Series of films. Really, really good. Okay. We should do the first one at some point.
All right. So he wrote that, the 1950s Quartermass TV film, movie that went on to, you know, spawn numerous others. So he was asked to write the script. He said of his script, the main story had to do with deception, psychological shocks rather than physical ones. So producer Dino De Laurentiis said, yeah, that's fantastic. Love it. Also put violence and gore in. Carpenter Hill and longtime Carpenter collaborator Tommy Lee Wallace, who would go on to become the director of this, they agreed that it needed more violence, more gore. Wallace, in a 2022 interview that I found, said Neil's draft lacked an understanding of what young horror movie fans were flooding into theatres for. It was as if he was still writing for British television in the 1950s.
Yeah, no, he said it was moody and dark and fascinating and great, but he had to write in gore.
Right.
Yeah, he said, he does follow up that previous statement with, I didn't mean that as an insult. He was a master. His version was disturbing. There was interesting stuff, but it was more of a psychodrama than a pure horror movie. He says there was a Freudian subplot. Have a listen to this. Ellie had a Freudian subplot in this. She had a troubled relationship with her father. As a child, she'd been beaten by her father after she released a bird that he gave her as a gift because she felt the bird didn't need to be in a cage. So this was a running story that was drip-fed to Dr. Dan by Ellie throughout the movie. And the payoff comes at the end in Neil's draft, where Cochrane turns her into a five-year-old child. She's talking to Cochrane, who sees him as the figure of her father, and at that point realises it's a setup and releases the birds by throwing the handful of microchips into the air, killing Cochrane and all his henchmen.
Okay.
So that was going to be the ending in Neil's script. Wallace said as well of Neil's script, he was a little concerned that Neil wanted to send up the Irish unmercifully,
right,
through the depiction of Cochrane and his Silver Shamrock Toy Company. I thought it went well beyond satire. His biographer told me he suspected Neil was attempting satire, but if so, I don't think he did it skillfully enough. It just felt like he was coming down on the Irish in a kind of insulting way.
Okay.
Oh, Nigel.
Yeah. So Carpenter Hill and Wallace revived the script. Neil gets the hump and has his name taken off the project, despite the plot, according to Wallace, still being 60% his draft. He doesn't get credited for this movie at all.
Yeah, Tommy Lee Wallace said he said it's ridiculous that he's got the only credit on the script. Mm-hmm. Because he said then John Carpenter did a rewrite, Tommy didn't like it, Tommy did a rewrite, but he said all three of them should have the writing credit. So something went wrong there in the process.
Wallace wasn't actually the first choice for director. Joe Dante was set to direct this. And I, watching this, I kind of wonder what he'd have done with it, because there's humour in here that I don't think is milked quite as well as Joe Dante might have milked it.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, he jumped ship just weeks before shooting to make his segment of the Twilight Zone movie, which I have to say is a good idea, because to me that is the best segment of the Twilight Zone movie with the kid who makes horrible things happen if people don't do what he says. I can relate. This was a minor success. Lowest grossing Halloween movie at the time until Halloween 5, The Revenge of Michael Myers, came out. But, I got a lot of love for this movie because Tommy Lee Wallace gets a pass with whatever he does because he co-wrote and directed the It Tim Curry TV movie.
Right.
Which completes this week's semi-obligatory Tim Curry reference.
That's so nice, isn't it?
Yeah, it's this time of
year,
isn't it?
Like a half one, yeah.
So, as it turns out, audiences did not like this movie. Neither did critics. They felt that they needed Michael Myers and Jamie Lee Curtis. And what the hell were they thinking? They also said it'd be good if there'd been some fucking witches. But there you go.
Did you read that quote from Roger Ebert's review?
Yeah.
Which is a bit of a spoiler. Sorry, Roger, you shouldn't do this. But talking of the actress who plays Ellie, he says she has one of those rich voices that makes you wish she had more to say in a better role. Too bad she plays her last scene without a head.
It has, to talk about what Chris mentioned, it has had this reappraisal over the years, and it has become a cult classic. Tommy Lee Wallace puts this down to, in this 2022 interview, he says, Halloween has turned into quite the obsessional holiday involving lots of candy and props, yet not a lot of time is spent looking into the history of it or self-reflecting. Instead, there's lots of enthusiasm and fun, and kids, of course, gobble it up. So my movie very much plays into that.
That's true.
He also said this reappraisal of Season of the Witch has been healing for him.
I saw him say that, yeah.
Yeah, he said it hurt a lot at the time. I knew we'd made a good movie and I just felt we'd stumbled badly, which is what you were saying, Chris, on its release. I think an ad campaign that would have explained what we were up to, that we were trying to start something new, really laying it out for the fans, might have helped.
And all fair and all true, there are still some other shit things in it, in fairness.
But very confusing. Halloween in the title, John Carpenter's name above it. It's, I can totally see why audiences were flummoxed by it, and it should neither have had Halloween 3 in the title or Season of the Witch in the title.
Yep.
They got it wrong on both fronts.
Yeah,
and also probably if you're trying to get rid of Michael Myers, don't remind people of Michael Myers trailer.
Why is that?
I'll get into it. Shall we go through the movie?
Yes.
So the bit we were just talking about, the Michael Myers advert for Halloween, the immortal classic. John Carpenter, you like
steady. Let other people say it.
Yeah, let other people say it. Nevertheless, that was one of the things Tommy Lee Wallace wanted to do to connect this to the bigger Halloween universe, but also this title sequence with the pumpkin. That was him giving a nod to the previous two title sequences, which featured pumpkins, but updating it with graphics.
It is the 80s, isn't it?
It's 3 minutes of 80s on screen through the music and the visuals. I was in heaven.
Yeah. It is good.
I love
it. 8-bit pumpkin.
Yeah!
I love it. And if you didn't feel you were back in the world of Halloween, here we are, the 23rd of October, Northern California.
This drives me insane.
I knew it.
But I'm sorry, we've got a group of professional filmmakers. How can we show that an hour has passed? Oh, God. All right. A, does it matter? No. B, do you have a clock? Yeah. Well, what we could do, we could just put 1 hour later on the bottom. What are you thinking?
It makes it feel like a documentary, Vicky.
It does. And then to count down the days as well, it's like, oh, come on. Like, Crapley, have a calendar. But does it matter?
I think that an hour later is
ridiculous.
Yeah, that's too much. I like the day countdown because we all know.
Even though it's on the telly, 8 more days. We know when it is. You're telling us twice.
Vicky makes a good point. We hear the advert quite a lot.
But isn't that the point? Isn't it supposed to be the saturation of marketing that is making these kids all buy these masks? So it's supposed to be there and it's supposed to be jarring every time you hear it.
When you're told how many days it is to Halloween, you don't need a number on screen.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. I like the soundtrack. John Carpenter and his longtime collaborator, Alan Howarth. It's good. Their intention with this score is the melding of the supernatural with technology.
Yeah. Mm. Great.
And they were using state-of-the-art tech to put it together. It's what John Carpenter called his electronic colouring book.
His Casio keyboard.
We see a little news report. A big stone, the blue stone, in fact, from Stonehenge.
I love the fact that because obviously it's Britain, they're like, and this is, you know that this is some of reporting for BBC News, like, I'm at Stonehenge, bit of it's missing, back to you. That is so good.
So this guy seems to be on the run. He runs to a garage actually, let me tell you a bit about the thinking that Tommy Lee Wallace had behind this famous advert that we're going to be hearing a lot in this movie. He said, we had no money, so we knew we were going to have to use something in the public domain or just make something up ourselves. He said, I knew London Bridge damn well was in the public domain, so no problem there. So he has that played on a little keyboard. It's his voice. He recorded his voice several times and had it sped up. And he said, it sounds like demented dwarves in a padded cell.
Great.
That's what he was going for.
Okay.
Or Chippendale.
Yes.
Yeah. So this dude who's been on the run, he's holding a Halloween mask. Enter Sex Dr. Dan. Sex on legs.
It's a great opening 15 minutes, though, I think, up until he gets his eyes gouged out. I'm quite into it.
I was losing the thread a bit until when the eyes were out, I was like, okay, this is excellent.
Sorry, I was in for the eyes.
Yeah.
I was in for the eyes out. Yeah, it's good. It's good. So, do you want to talk about Tom Atkins as Dr. Dan?
Great, yeah.
I couldn't work out what Linda said, but she does say drinking and a doctor.
She says drinking and doctoring,
yes.
Which I think is good. It's like, oh, we're going to do character, but that's fine. And it does come back, in fairness, when she doesn't believe him. She's like, I mean,
it's another reason why maybe this film wasn't a success. I'm hoping you feel the same as me. I love this man.
He's a dog.
I love this actor. I love this actor. I love this character. And if you'd had a more conventionally handsome leading man,
yeah,
you're making more money, but I'm enjoying it less.
That's fair.
This guy is great.
He's an arsehole, though, isn't he? Because I'm jumping ahead a bit. And it's good that it's in here because it's more complex than you'd be expecting. But he's meant to be seeing his kids and he's like, oh, yeah, I can't get out of it. And it's like, because he's going for a shag.
Yeah.
Bad dad.
He
bad
picks
daddy.
Up a six pack on the way.
He does, yeah.
He's not a good guy,
I
which
don't
makes
mind
him
that.
An interesting
yeah,
hero.
That's fine. But Ellie is like, that is bad. She's, who, what? Like, first of all, she says papa, which makes me want to vomit. But then she's later on, she's like, I'm older than I look. And it's like, well, maybe you are a child.
We haven't got to
Ellie. She really is jumping ahead. Really?
No, I'm just saying.
It's hard, isn't it, sometimes?
It's just inexcusable that any writing that was like, what's the fucking chemistry between these guys? Zero, nothing.
Well, they haven't met yet. Yeah.
because they just fall into bed.
Well, because before, when I said, shall we talk about Tom Atkins, I was specifically saying Tom Atkins.
Because you're saying he's brilliant, I'm saying that's
fine. I didn't say he was brilliant.
But you
great
said
actor.
He's brilliant.
He's a great actor.
No, what I mean is, they've gone, let's have an unlovable hero, but they've given her no attention. She's not anything.
We haven't met her yet.
Yeah.
Oh, fine.
Right. I'll tell you what Tommy Lee Wallace has to say.
I don't even care because he will have written it badly.
No, he's kind of on your side, V. He says Tom has a great masculinity that isn't dripping with testosterone. It's not standard stock machismo. He's a real human being on screen. He also kind of is a shit who turns his back on his family responsibilities, seems a bit lax at work, and is probably an alcoholic. Yet he's also likable.
Oh, he's definitely
only an actor like Atkins could pull that off.
Okay.
We meet his wife. Women are such nags, aren't they? What a nag.
Jesus.
Go and have a beer, Tom. You've earned it. Yeah. Go on, Dr.
You're
Dan.
You're a fucking surgeon. Like,
Shut up, Linda. I mean, in fairness, before we find out that they're death masks, the masks she buys her kids are a shit ton better than whatever he turns up with. I think one's a goat.
No, he's definitely a bad dad.
So, you want to jump ahead? You love a jumping ahead. Yeah. Do you know, the whole point of him being a bad dad is the idea at the end when it holds on his face and he's on the phone, the suggestion is that it's because of all his failings as a father, as a man, that he's let it get to this stage. And if he wasn't always having a drink, if he wasn't behaving the way he was, if he wasn't having sex with Ellie, who we haven't met yet, then he would perhaps have saved all the children in America.
We're blaming him for this?
Apparently so.
Oh, that's tough.
I blame Linda because if she fucking let up for a moment, he probably wouldn't need that drink and then he'd have saved all the children. So Linda has blood on her hands.
Such a nag.
Anyway, we're in hospital. This guy, he's like, they're going to kill us, all of us. Dr. Dan, I think he's just got to work. I could do with a nap. Want to take one with me?
No.
Did you just pinch my bottom as well? This is not acceptable. None of this is acceptable.
What a quiet hospital Dr. Dan works in also.
So we see this evil dude, this hitman, this assassin, this, as we're going to find out in a bit, clockwork human. Human in inverted commas. So this idea came from Wallace, who toyed with the idea for years of making a movie called Corporate War, which is about two huge corporations going into battle against one another via armies of faceless executives in grey suits. That movie never got made, as we know, so he tried to put that into this.
Great.
It's good. So the doc does take a nap, and while he's having a nap, this hitman guy kills our other guy. Doc chases him with beer energy. and then the killer silently blows himself up, having cleaned his gloves first. Creepy.
Yeah.
Creepy. It's good. At this stage, I'm excited. I want to know more about these people. I'll work it out far too soon. I think the movie expects me to not know what's going on for longer. But there you go.
You're too clever.
I am. That's what I was trying to say. But thanks for agreeing with me. Yeah. So Linda's pissed again because Dan won't pick up the kids, even though two men died in the hospital. I mean, come on, Linda.
I do feel a bit sorry for him in this scene.
Jeez. this is hilarious. This feels like a joke. He looks out of the window the following morning. The smoking wreck of the car is still just outside the hospital. It's still burning. No police cordon. No one's put it out. It's just there.
It was the 80s.
Yeah, that's true. So, hey, do you want to talk about Ellie?
Yeah, I do. I also want to ask, you know the coroner woman, is it me or is there a trope that's this very, there's always a weirdly, it's been a sexual relationship, but it isn't anymore. And the coroner is always like super confident.
This is amazing. So we haven't yet got to Teddy. I said, do you want to talk about Ellie?
Oh, yeah, I do, yeah. My notes were a little bit disjointed.
I can tell.
A little bit out of order.
No, that's fine.
Let's talk about Ellie.
Right, sure.
Okay, yeah.
So this is actress Stacey Nelkin. Do you want to know a little bit of history about Stacey Nelkin?
If it's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, if it's interesting.
Trained at RADA. And then, go up to understand.
Her favourite colour is navy blue. So Nelkin, Woody Allen's film Manhattan was based, according to her, on her romantic relationship with Woody Allen.
Sorry, that's gross.
She met him when she was 16.
Oh, Jesus.
On the set of Annie Hall. Her bit part in that film ended up being cut.
Right.
And their relationship began when she was 17 years old and he was 42.
Uh-huh.
Allen has said they dated for some time, but the Nelkin was not underage.
Right.
Mm. She's also going to be the sixth replicant in Blade Runner until the part got cut.
Oh, okay.
How do you rate? It seems that you want to rate that the interest level of that trivia.
I think the Woody Allen trivia is good.
All right.
Yeah, that's
so
good.
So just in future, drop the Blade Runner a bit. Just
I think you're talking about replicant six that didn't make it. Mm. Yeah, right. I'd get rid of that.
Okay, fine. She finds out her dad's dead. Dr. Dan witnesses her crying. Stares at her a bit too long.
I'm in there.
Leaves. He's going to pick his moment. He knows now is not the right time. Let the vulnerability sink in a bit more. Let the misery, the tragedy of realising your father's dead need a father figure.
Oh.
That's where he's strong.
He's waiting for the point that it's acceptable to say, who's your daddy now?
Oh, God, Dad.
No? Too much?
Perfect.
She'd be well up for it, though. That's the problem. Like
she packs for sex.
Thank you. Because I was looking, I was like, well, it's a good job you brought your fancy knickers on what is actually an unplanned holiday. So you either always wear pants like that, which seems unlikely, or you've got a just-in-case pair.
She has a very small bag with that negligee in it. And I mean, they're going to investigate her dad's murder.
But she is bang up for it.
Murder clone.
That's what I said. She knows where they're why they're really going. Everyone knows, right? They both know they're going to go fuck in a seedy motel.
If your dad's skull has just been crushed, are you looking for adventure? I mean, to be fair to him.
Can you imagine red knickers or black knickers? I don't know.
Well, black, obviously. I'm in mourning still.
No grief for lips.
I'm wearing black underwear.
Yeah, that's true. Show some respect.
Yeah. Tom Atkins said, I walk out of my wife and kids, I grab beers, I head north with a young lady. I didn't feel like a medical professional. He said, I don't know what kind of a doctor I was.
That's such a good point, though, because when Ellie's daddy's on the gurney thing, he sort of touches him and he's like, should we get a scan? Yeah, what scan? Doesn't matter.
Yeah. I'm going to take a nap. So, the Teddy, now we can talk about Teddy. So,
yes.
Teddy explains to Dr. Dan that the killer pulled the man's skull apart, so must have massive lower arm strength.
Is that a wanking joke? Because they sort of look, that's where I mean this sexually confident coroner trope. Mm. She's like, if you know what I mean. And it's like, well, it just means you've got strong arms. But then I thought, oh, maybe she's talking about, you know, that strength.
I didn't pick up on that.
No, me neither.
Could
me neither.
Be. I mean, I'll give you the benefit of the
I'm
doubt.
I'm reaching.
Here.
Get it? Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I mean, I feel a little sorry for Teddy. She doesn't have the best arc in this film.
And no.
90% of what she does is because she thinks she's going to get to shag Dr. Dan again.
Yeah.
And she's not.
Yeah.
She's going to get a drill in
the
ear.
I just feel like that coroner character is also a staple of like British TV detective dramas, which is they used to be shagging and now they're not and she's fine with it.
Yeah. Well, this is where we stole it from.
Oh, it must be.
What I will say is also it takes, I did the math, 6 days to figure out there's no bones or teeth in the car.
Not a great coroner.
6 days? Yeah. You had one job.
I honestly, I'm not sure if anyone who knows what they're doing in this hospital. Like, no one seems to have a fucking clue.
It doesn't seem like a hospital.
Doctors are sleeping. There's no one here.
That's the same as the XS3, both of them.
Yeah,
that's fair.
We get the Halloween trailer on the TV, as we mentioned, the immortal classic. This is great. So he's in a bar. Do you know what? I'll tell you after the break.
Imagine the
the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with The Second Tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search Second Tier in your podcast app.
And hit subscribe.
Hey marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners, so there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Okay, so Dr. Dan is in a bar, and then Ellie turns up and she says, one of the nurses told me that I could find you here. Mm. That's rude. Mm. If you're a doctor and you're going for a drink in a bar, it's almost like, yeah.
No, Dr. Dan has said, if anyone attractive asks where I am, tell them I'm in the bar.
Yeah,
we know Dr. Dan.
She's done all the work and found out where this factory is. And so they're off to a mask factory. Dan gets an earful from Linda again.
She's such a nag.
Just unbelievable.
It is bad. But she's like, you were supposed to be here. And he's like, I can't get out of it.
He's holding a six-pack while he's on the phone.
He says he's got a doctor. Conference.
Yeah.
Seems vague.
I really like his style.
Yeah.
He's a good guy, as we established right at the start, right from the off. he's honest. He's a real person. So we're off to the factory in creepy carpenter town, ruled by Conall Cochrane. So before we meet him, we hear what a great man he is.
Yeah.
He goes past in a limo. Ellie says, let's get to the factory. Dan says, whoa. I need a drink.
And a sleep, in quote marks.
Well, he suggests the motel.
Yeah,
again,
he does.
I like his style.
Oh, where can we sleep?
He's like, should I get a separate room? Do you want me to go in the car?
Yeah, is that what if
and
you
she say... says, yeah. She says, where do you want to sleep, Dr. Chalice?
I've brought my fancy knickers.
Where could you sleep?
Where could you possibly sleep?
Here is what I'm saying. Just so there's no confusion. Yeah. Right here.
I'm much too young for you, obviously, but it doesn't matter.
Sleep inside me. This is a weird town. We get all these cameras checking the streets. Not sure why that is.
That doesn't come back, does it?
No, not really. Not that it bothers Dr. Dan, because even though there's a curfew on a tannoy and you're on a covert...
No one's complete to get booze!
You're on a covert mission. He's like, walking down the street.
The curfew is in action. Go to your homes.
The cameras and the curfew, it's all security, isn't it? It's all to keep everything a secret in the self-contained town where pretty much everyone is working for the company apart from the homeless man.
I think Ellie would be within her rights to be a bit surprised when Dan says, whoa, I could use a drink. He might have meant, should we go to a bar, dinner? Yeah. He means he's going to go buy some spirits in a brown paper bag and drink them with a homeless man in an alley. That's what he means.
I was weirded out when they shared the bottle. I found that, I think this
don't judge.
I know I shouldn't, obviously. But is that obvious time where someone says, can I have a sip? And you go, I suppose so.
Yeah, so this homeless man is there to say a few things about Cochran brought in his own personnel, and it's really weird. The factory, it's like, well, we kind of know that. It's like, oh, my head's come off. Oh, that was brief. So he's in and out, which is exactly what Dr. Dan's doing right now.
That's right. Oh, it's so gross. Because they've obviously gone, right, actress that plays Ellie, apparently Woody Allen was banging to you, so could you just do something sexy? And she's like, well, I could wrap myself up in the blah, it's in the sheets. Well, and he sort of comes in, he's like, oh, and it's like, they're joking. She's gone to all this effort. She's like, I've got my sexy sheet on.
Yeah.
Did you read about the nudity clause?
No.
So, I mean, I saw her saying that she was uncomfortable. She didn't really. She signed up for doing the sex scene, but it was her first sex scene. Right. And she had a sort of, I think, maybe certain parts of her body couldn't be shown.
Yeah.
So they just put that part of her body in Tom Atkins' mouth.
Oh, my God.
Sorry. That's brilliant. We can't show you nipple, Tom. On that.
Open up.
On that.
To be fair to her, she said they had a right laugh that day.
Yeah. Oh,
she doesn't have bad memories of it.
That's true.
It looks like fun.
Does it? It looks excruciating.
He's a gent. He's a gent, Tom Atkins.
Well, he's got his mouth full of
So they have sex. And then just before they have sex, the second time, he then goes, do you know what? How old are you?
Yeah. So I've been meaning to ask, but frankly, I didn't want to know.
That was on his mind just before time number one.
Yeah.
He was like, I should check, but I've already got my mouth full, so I'm not going to. And then she says, relax, I'm older than I look. That's not ID. That is not ID. A verbal statement doesn't, like, Your Honour, she said, I'm older. Did you check? Well, no, she said it.
A lot of not now love happening here, though, isn't
it? That's why it feels odd to film it. I think you can say you're comfortable with it, but I suppose if you're an actor watching it back and you're like, it doesn't have its place, it just feels like, let's just plonk a lot of sex in the middle of this for obvious reasons.
Do you want me to make it a little weirder?
Yeah.
You know, we've just met Marge Gutman, a buyer.
Yeah.
That is Tom Atkins' wife in real life.
Is it really?
At the time, it didn't last.
Oh my God, that's amazing. That's so dark. They are even though obviously it wouldn't have happened geographically like this, you're basically putting her in the motel room next door to
She's
her
dying.
Husband.
She's dying next door while he's having sex.
Twice.
Oh God, that's fucked up.
That's so weird.
Oh my God. Wow.
Lovely stuff.
Yeah, so Marge gets a laser to her face. Don't put a hairpin in a microchip.
Also, her hair's not pinned back. I'm sorry to be a stickler, but she's like, here's this hairpin from my whole hair that's always down. Why have you got, what's this redundant hairpin?
Shall we meet the legend that is Dan O'Herlihy? He turns up Cochrane. Brilliant. Brilliant. It's our old friend, the head of OCP himself, the old man from RoboCop. He's got so good in this.
You've got him from RoboCop versus Michael Hunsaker from Lethal Weapon. That's a great 80s combo. He's a great presence, isn't he?
Yeah, he's brilliant.
He's great. And obviously, Dr. Dan wants to know everything he can about Connell Cochran. So why not call Teddy, who I think may be well outside her job description, to start researching the head of a toy company. She's doing an autopsy on a burnt-out car.
Well, she's shit at that job, so maybe she's good at something else.
So again, this is one of those minor things where you go, oh, Dr. Dan's not a good guy. Because he basically gets her to find out about Cochrane by promising her dinner, having just had sex with Ellie.
Oh, yeah.
He's setting him up for the future.
He's not married to Ellie.
No, that is true. And who knows where the booze will take him. So they get shown it, how the masks are manufactured in a factory tour. I actually found this quite interesting, like a segment on Blue Peter.
Agreed.
How do they make that?
I like both films. I loved being in the factories.
Mm, it's good. We meet some mechanical toys, and you're like, oh, mechanical men. Mm.
The old lady knitting is frightening, though.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, really good.
It's a good scary moment, and her head falls off.
I love that.
Yeah, that is good. I wonder where we're going to be at the end of the film. Could we possibly be behind the door marked final processing?
It's really funny where he's like, it's final processing. And it's like, oh, that sounds ominous. What's that room called? Yeah, that's final processing, actually. That is where we do that.
Look at the sign.
Yeah, we could have just put a big X over it now that you said it like that, because everybody knows what goes on, but it's probably best not to say.
We don't want anyone going in final processing, so I'm going to verbally name check it and then point you in the direction of a sign
that
reads final processing. Don't come in here till the climax.
He's also got a very questionable Native American ornament, which we close up on for a bit too long.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah,
naughty that, Connell.
So Ellie sees her dad's car, but they go back to the motel because all the scary men. Dan has another drink
and says, I think it's time for the Marines. What?
Yeah, I know. For what is it at this point? A missing person's case.
In a toy shop.
This old man who ran a toy shop has gone missing. Marines, send in the Marines.
Yeah. By the way, later I'm going to call Ad HQ, so I'm into big sweeping statements. Yeah, Ellie vanishes. That's her done for the movie.
It is, unfortunately, yeah.
She gone. He gets attacked, goes on the run around this very Carpenter-esque town to a very Carpenter-esque score, breaks into the factory. He's going to try and find final processing, find out what goes in. It's final processing, Dr. Dan. And he finds that clockwork woman that you mentioned, Cochran. He gets caught. Dan gets caught. And then Cochran, there's a beautiful moment here where Cochran, even though this man has broken into his factory, is more concerned about the damage done to this, I think, 17th century toy than he is. He doesn't even seem to notice Dr. Dan. He's just looking at the toy that he
loves.
But
then he says, oh, I'll just replace it. Is there a lot of them then?
Yeah, that bit was boring. It was like, I thought it was rare. No.
There's loads of them in Germany. Yeah,
loads. So he's excited for Halloween. Busy day for me. Go to the basement. There's part of Stonehenge.
Yeah.
Massive bit of Stonehenge as well. Hard to believe they managed to steal it, to be perfectly honest.
Well, you wouldn't believe
how we transported it to America.
Then we'll leave that
there. I think that's funny writing, man.
Yeah, me too.
You know, you're supposed to laugh at that.
I love the lair as well. Like, lots of space between the monitors for no reason.
It's very 1970s James Bond. Yes. It feels like Blofeld's lair.
But I think they're leaning into that because then he sits there and tells us his plan, like a James Bond villain, and then he's got her tied up like a villain would do in James Bond, and the same with Dr. Dan. So it's all the things that happen in a James Bond movie. Yeah.
And he doesn't kill Dr. Dan, when it'd be so much simpler to just kill him.
Tells him his plan and then ties him up in front of the telly.
And he's like, you could disrupt this. We'll roll the dice. It's fine. I'm sure it'll be okay.
But he spends quite a lot of time explaining his plan. I think here you needed to explain why he's a witch.
Yeah, fair.
Because traditionally we think of witches as women. It's fine if a witch could be a man, but we need some kind of explanation here because it's just too ingrained in our brains.
Well, let's talk about it. Also, he sort of says a lot, but it's not at this point. It's another later monologue, which we'll come to. But he basically says the world is going to change tonight. And you're like, and how? And he's like, well, it's going to change. You won't believe how it's going to change. You're like, tell me how, though. And I've still no idea. I've the end result of his plan is.
No more kids.
That's fine. But is that it?
I don't know.
No.
That's a big change.
It is, actually. It's significant.
Who cares about kids and what they like?
Anyway. Less American kids.
We have a truly amazing scene now. So the Cup for Family, who are his best seller, he experiments on them. He shows Dr. Dan what the masks are going to do. Little buddy, his head
melts.
So
I don't think you need the bugs. Can I just say this?
So I think it's a literal TV rots your brain. Consumerism rots your brain. And his brain has suddenly rotted and all the bugs have appeared. Yeah. I thought they just put bugs in his brain.
Well, because it looks like magic bugs because there's too many bugs and there's a snake.
But also, doesn't it look like what would come out of a rotting pumpkin, which is what happens to his head? Yeah. The mask turns into a rotting pumpkin.
I'm just being a stickler for logic. It's like laser beam, yes, will kill the kids, yes. Stonehenge is the magic that makes it.
But, it is
magic bugs as well as tech.
Yes.
I have a question. So, America exists on several different time zones.
It does.
Oh, yeah, no, they've messed this up. People in LA are having to watch this at midnight, I think, or something.
By which point, even without the internet, I imagine stories have started to filter from one coast to the other going, don't watch the advert, our kids are all rotting like lumps of bug.
Okay, I see what you're saying. You're saying that it would screen, yeah, it would screen later. I thought they would be going out at the same time in all the different time zones.
Can I ask a question? Yeah, that's going to make me sound like an idiot if I'm wrong, but I'm just going to take the risk. Yep. It goes out at the same time, but it's a different... Yeah, I'm agreeing. Okay. That's right, isn't it?
Okay.
So you can't ring your mate and go, oh, my kid is now a snake, because it's the same time, fine. But your clock
No, but one of the time places would be too late for children to be watching. So it just doesn't work.
Okay.
Fine.
Also, again, the title card thing... Maybe it's a budget thing, but you're like, we're in LA, how can we show it? Just say LA. We're in Louisiana, how could it just say it? It's like, there must be other landmarks you can use to denote that you're in a different place. And also, does it matter? Can't they just show we're across the whole of the United States?
Landmark in Louisiana do you want?
I've never been!
But you see...
You wouldn't recognise it
exactly,
then if it popped
that's
up.
But, the point.
But to my point, does it matter if I don't
what
know?
I mean, yes, because the whole point is like, you're saying that then tells you you're in Louisiana.
I've been told, Cornel has
all right,
told
what
me.
What Ohio landmark do you want? What Nebraska landmark do you want?
A buffalo.
Those are the literal ones they did because I wrote them down.
Yeah, did they?
Yeah. So Teddy is ringing Dr. Dan for some reason, probably to just check on the dinner reservation. I feel a bit sorry for Teddy at this point.
She shouldn't get killed.
She sat in a room for the whole movie and gets a drill in the ear. And
I also think
it.
From the makers of Halloween, which is like ultimate final girl, whatever, she's been nothing but helpful.
Different movie. This is final Dan.
Yeah, no, but they're like, oh, we wanted to do what people liked about Halloween. It's like, you've just killed the girl for no reason other than see it.
Killed two of them.
Yes, I don't like that.
Dan actually says to Cochrane, why? Why are you doing this? And Cochrane says, do I need a reason? That's the end of it. Do I need a reason?
Me. Yeah.
Yes.
We've already told his reason.
Which
He's the ultimate practical joker. And this is the ultimate practical joke.
Yes.
He does give a very colourful speech here.
Yeah.
In our Celtic glens, in our homes of wattle and clay, barriers between real and unreal come down and the dead might want to sit by our fires of turf. The festival of Samhain, the last great one was 3,000 years ago and the hills ran red with blood of children and animals.
Ooh. And nothing changed, though. That's what you're saying. The hills ran red.
Yep.
And then we go, oh, and then.
And then.
And then.
And then.
So I'm going to do it again now because...
He said, didn't he? He said, I always have fun when I get to do a Cork accent.
Yeah.
I got to do a Cork accent here. I really enjoyed the role. I didn't enjoy the finished picture.
Oh, he's brilliant in it, though.
He is. He enjoyed the role.
Yeah.
But it's his way of going, I'm very good in an otherwise shit movie. Dan escapes because Cochrane is too busy on a phone call to notice.
God, I love this bit. No, it's more like the robots, they're going, oh, shit.
Yeah, he is.
He's like, I don't want to be rude and interrupt my boss, but it's like, oh, Dr. Dan, oh, God, I'll get so fired, but I should tell you.
He goes to the Die Hard air vent. I think I need to see him in a vest
course,
here.
Of course you do.
Actually, maybe not.
He'd struggle, I think.
He tosses a mask over the security camera, making the image on the monitor seem to be like peering through the eye holes. Another nod to Halloween there, which reminds you of how great Michael Myers was as a villain. So he goes into the air vents, runs across roofs. He's got all his beer energy back. He calls Linda, of all the people. Dr. Dan, what a person.
He hasn't got another friend in this world, though.
This is my favourite phone call, though, where he has to say, I'm not drunk, a couple of times. You've really got a problem, Dr. Dan.
She starts saying that he's jealous for some reason. And then
he's jealous because he's saying destroy the masks. Mm. He's going, you've got to destroy the masks. And she's
masks?
Like, yeah.
Has he got shit
you're
masks?
Just that's good character. Yeah. You're being a jealous ex because I got them brilliant masks and you got them shit masks. Mm. That's what it is.
So it's quite an active decision here. He can't save his kids because Linda, shut up. So he decides, I should save Ellie then, so I've still got something to have sex
shag.
With. So he gets spotted. I mean, at this point, I've decided I don't think he's going to be too bothered if his kids die because he won't have to deal with Linda anymore. He throws the tags at the mechanical men while the pumpkin ad is playing. They all go wrong. Cochrane claps but then gets disappeared. But he's grinning as he disappears. So
sequel.
Is he happy to go? No, we're not doing it. It's an anthology.
Oh, sorry. Cochrane, God, yeah,
is
he said that.
Is he happy to go?
I like the clap, though.
Oh, great clap.
Yeah.
Cheeky.
Yeah, a bit of respect to Dr. Dan.
And also, if you should, that's also like, I should have killed you, but I didn't.
Yeah.
For sport.
And not only have you defeated me, you've done it while really drunk.
Brilliant. It's brilliant.
I mean, you like, should we just go for a drink? Let's just be friends about this.
That
it's
is
fine.
Such a good reading of that clap. Fucking piss it, and you still did it. You fucking well done. Even I have to begrudgingly,
yeah,
yes.
Respect.
Yeah, in the novelization, it is suggested that he survives,
yeah,
that Stonehenge. The magic
takes him.
The witchcraft transports him somewhere else to another, yeah, dimension.
Cool.
So I sort of got confused here. I thought because Dr. Dan is pressing some buttons on a console,
like he knows what he's doing.
I was like, oh, cool. So he's turned the ad off here.
Yes, that's why.
But then no, the ad is still going to happen. So he gets to do the run to the same garage. That garage attendant must be like, the fuck? Weren't you at the hospital? Okay, cool. Fine. We've got the Ellie twist. Oh, it's a good twist.
That she's a robot.
Clockwork Ellie, yeah.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, it's a shame.
It's a shit.
She doesn't deserve it.
No.
But,
so, because ultimately, it means she burned to death chained up in that factory somewhere, or, yeah, she's been killed already.
On the gurney thing. I don't know. But it's a sad end for her character, because basically you're watching...
on the gurney, it's Clockwork Ellie, because that's how they trick Dr. Dan into rescuing her.
But you're seeing, yeah, another female character get... you're just watching him, yeah, smash her head, yeah, off.
And it's not Linda, so... I mean,
so she doesn't even deserve
it. It's a double whammy.
And I think it's a misstep here with the fact that she won't die.
Three times.
Yeah, it goes on too long.
Yeah.
It feels too broad, and this is a character that we like and, yeah, we didn't want to see die. And so to make her death comedic and, yeah, drag it out, it feels like something out of a spoof.
I agree.
And so then we have him on the phone calling Ad HQ. Turn these bloody adverts off. Kids are going to die. And then obviously that final ad. One's still on.
He's very good here.
Tom.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think he's really good. He really commits. Mm.
So a lot of people didn't like this ending, though. A lot of the critics at the time hated the nihilism of this ending. So this is what Wallace has to say about the ending. It was the right ending for the movie and my own personal tribute to Don Siegel's Invasion of the Body Snatchers, because at the end of that 1956 movie, the main protagonist succeeds in alerting the authorities at a Los Angeles airport. I hated that ending. I discovered later it was forced on the movie. It was an injustice and that would have never happened. So hearing that impassioned statement, Universal immediately try and put a happy ending on this movie. Wallace says that Carpenter was a true gentleman and stood by whatever decision Wallace made, and so they got to keep that ending, which Wallace says, I thought it made it a true horror movie.
Okay.
Agreed.
Yeah, it's a great ending. Absolutely brilliant ending.
Tom Atkins said, I think I stopped it in time and saved all the kids.
Yeah. I'm a bit like that.
Yeah. Do you want a beer? Where do we go from here? Well, it did all right, but it didn't do that well. It made a profit, but a small profit. Executive producer Mustafa Akkad, he said, Myers has to come back after this movie. He said, I want him back for Halloween 4. Carpenter and Hill pitched an alternative idea, again asking Joe Dante to direct another anthology, but in the end, a deal was worked out where they gave up the rights to Halloween because Michael Myers was going to come back and they didn't want to be involved in that. And that's all I got. Any more? All right, let's do the bits. What in this movie of awesomeness, V, is your favourite scene?
I would like to
best
give
scene.
A special mention to when it's Clockwork Ellie, but we don't know that, and Dr. Dan, they are masked by a trolley of masks when they run across the factory floor. They're boop, 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 boop. I think that's really funny.
It's pure comedy. Dun, 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 dun.
Mask by mask. I think the death of what are the family called?
Kupfers.
I think that's really good. Mm. Like, it's just the panic. I'm not clear how the mum died. I think she faints because her son has been turned into bugs. And then a millipede goes in her ear, but fine. Mm. And then the husband trying to get, and everyone's just dead. And I always like it when it's like, it's not found footage, but you see it through the CCTV. I like that.
Well, I'll jump in here then, because that's my favourite scene. I think not only killing a child, little Buddy, but killing him in such a nasty way. I bloody loved it. Yes, I was like, that's grim and great. Chris?
The ending is great, but it's very hard to get a kid killed on screen.
Yeah.
And it's even harder to make it this horrible. But they do it. They give it Little Buddy. Little Buddy. So 1,000%, it's the best scene in the film. And like I said at the start, it's the film that 25 years later, I still remember.
Mm. Right then, most valuable whatever, Chris.
My runner-up is Mr. Tom Atkins. I'm just a big fan of his presence on screen. I enjoy him. Even if his character's an arsehole, I couldn't help but be fond of him.
Only he could play such an arsehole and still be likeable.
Although that quote about him not being like a testosterone man, I'm not buying that. He's a testosterone man.
he's
packed with it. But the winner for me is the horrible, horrendous Halloween song. Because I think it does the job perfectly. It's this earworm that gets in your ear. You can't forget it like a good advert should.
Yeah.
But also, it's the kind of song that you could imagine driving someone mad, which is kind of what it does to these children when it happens. So I think by nicking a bit of London Bridges Falling Down and putting the Chippendales on it, they hit on something that was perfect.
Okay, what's your most valuable whatever, V?
It's Dan O'Herlihy as Colonel Cochrane. He's just, it's a different kind of presence.
Okay, Jinx, yeah, mine as well. Dan O'Herlihy, I think he's absolutely brilliant and just menacing, and like, there's just a creepiness in his love for toys, and like he does with minimal like moments, just give this character a huge backstory. And I think part of it is that speech about Ireland in 3,000 years ago. I loved it.
And you buy the stuff he says. At one point, he says that this woman who's dying on a gurney, we're taking her to the hospital in my toy factory. What? with the normal person, I'd be like, what are you talking about? I'm like, oh yeah, there's probably a hospital in this toy factory.
What would you change, V?
So, Dan is a deadbeat dad and a dog. And so what happens is, yes, he saves the rest of the world's kids, but not his own kids, because he was chasing tail that weekend and it got his kids killed and nobody else's. I don't know how you do that, but he gets the adverts turned off and then Linda's like, I've still got the telly on because of you or whatever. Yeah. And it's just his kids that die.
Well, the alternate ending would have been him on the phone to his wife.
Yes.
Or hearing his children die rather than this. Yeah. And I think this is better, but that was sort of, I thought, well, that would be the good alternate, wouldn't it? The really upsetting one.
It'd be more upsetting in a weird way because he'd done a good thing.
Yeah.
But because he's such a dog, he couldn't save his own kids, but he sacrificed them for everyone else. I think I prefer that. I suppose because it's more, when horror is a bit more narrow, it's a bit more upsetting.
Well, when you've got a face, because otherwise it's just nameless
just
children,
kids.
Or like kids,
yeah.
American kids, whatever, kids in America.
But
whatever.
little whatever his kids are called, Mabel.
We'd spend a little bit more time with them, which is getting close to my change.
All right, what's your change?
Well, the Kupfers are out of a sitcom. They're quite broad caricatures. The costume designer was told to dress them as the ugliest Americans imaginable.
That's harsh. I think she looks amazing.
I think you could maybe make the Kupfers or Buddy really nice, really likable people, because I think that death scene would have so much more poignance if we're really sad. But they've been presented as idiots and almost like, we're laughing at
them.
They
feel like one of the Roald Dahl bad families from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
So true,
so I think that scene would play differently.
Yeah.
The one that we all said was the best scene, but I think you could make it even better.
Yeah.
And also, I'm absolutely with you on Dan O'Herlihy being brilliant in this film. But Season of the Witch got me thinking, well, what if they found that was an actress playing that? What if it was a woman who ran the toy factory? So I started doing a bit of investigation. Who could it be? And I was looking for an Irish actress of a similar age to him. And I found a woman who I didn't realise, but her mother's from Belfast. How about our villain is Angela Lansbury?
Yeah.
It works.
Sold.
And she's actually been a witch in Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
She has.
It's like a stealth sequel.
Great.
That's so good.
Yeah.
And then she could get transported back. Stonehenge takes her back and she's reunited with like her evil warlock husband.
Played by Dan O'Herlihy.
Yeah. Yes.
We've figured it out.
Brilliant.
So now I've heard your change about Dr. Dan's kids. I don't know if I prefer it. So I think Tommy Lee Wallace isn't making an ambiguous ending. I think he feels that Cochrane's plan works. I feel like the advert plays out, and I feel like a lot of children in America do die, and I like that. I think that's a great ending. So I think what should happen is it holds on Dan's face and then smash to black, and then it starts small, and then you just get this growing chorus of children's screams over a black screen as all the kids in America had their brains turn into snakes and bugs, and it's just growing wall of sound of screaming and screaming, and then the credits start. I think that would stay with you as an ending to this movie.
Yikes.
Yeah. I think it says a bit too much about me.
Maybe.
Dogs don't wear Halloween masks. So we are done with Season of the Witch, Halloween 3. Shall we do a quiz?
Yeah, kinda. All right. All right. So this is going out on October the 30th, meaning tomorrow is Halloween.
Okay.
I'm got a list here in front of me of the 19 most popular Halloween costumes from last year.
From last year. Oof.
As decided by Google Trends.
Okay.
So I want just take it in turns to guess.
Okay.
So some are specific, most are generic. One is a decade, one is the title of a TV show, and one is the title of a movie. Vicky, you go first.
Well, it wasn't last year, and it was, do you remember that Tiger King thing on Netflix? Carol Baskin. Is Carol Baskin one?
No.
Okay.
Wednesday Addams.
Oh, fuck.
No.
Right, not even from the Wednesday TV show. Is that, or maybe that hadn't come out.
One was a decade, the 90s.
No.
The 80s.
Yes.
One was a movie from last year. Or any of the...
So it was a belated sequel.
Right.
That's Halloween themed. And it went straight to streaming.
I don't know.
And we've done the film, the original film. So go another. Go general. A lot of these are quite general.
Okay. Just a vampire is always the most popular costume. Sexy
vampire.
Cat.
You've got vampire. Correct.
Okay. Chucky from Child's Play.
Correct.
Megan from just the trailer.
Too late.
Is it?
Mm. Megan. What? It's Megan's not one, right?
It's not.
Okay.
Frankenstein.
No.
Sexy witches.
Number one.
Yes.
Oh wait, sexy black cat.
No, you both said cats now. You're Vicky.
Anything, because it is an American list, so anything from Harry Potter?
No.
Okay.
Zombie?
No.
A mummy wrapped up in toilet roll?
No.
I did that Goldsmiths once, do you remember?
I do remember that.
That was really scary. There's a couple of burst into flames.
There's three superheroes on here.
Oh, Superman.
No.
Batman.
Yes. Vicky Batman. Wins. Vicky wins.
Batman for Halloween. Are you fucking kidding?
Better than Superman. So I'll do it for you. From bottom, from 19 to 1.
Uh-huh.
Batman, Angel, Doll, Chucky, Pumpkin, Hocus Pocus was the film. 1980s, Vampire Clown, Harley Quinn.
Yes.
Oh, of course.
Cowboy.
Weird.
One you didn't get, Cheerleader. It's always big.
Done that. Done that.
But I do Zombie Cheerleader.
Yeah. Rabbit.
A what?
Why?
Easy cat people. pirate.
But a sexy rabbit.
I thought.
Oh my God, all girls.
Do sexy cat with the little whiskers drawn on their little noses.
And what else?
Pirate. Fairy. The TV show, Stranger Things.
Oh, of course.
And then the top three. Dinosaur.
No.
Spider-Man.
Right.
And witch.
Yeah.
I don't believe that list. I've not seen half of those in London. That is such an American list. I was in Vegas once and you see people doing costumes
dinosaur,
like that in
I've
Vegas.
I've never seen that in my life.
Sexy dinosaur.
Of course.
Right then, that is us done with Halloween 3 Season of the Witch. So let's look ahead to next week's pairing. Chris, it's your turn for a clue.
Yes. So my clue for next week is we'll be doing the Duel of the Fates.
The Duel of the Fates. We should say, even though we're running into November, it is still a horror pairing.
We're going to do one more horror pair. Yeah, so you get your 4 weeks of horror.
4 weeks. Right then, we're doing the Duel of the Fates is your clue for next week. That is it for this episode. We're going to be back on Thursday talking the stuff and seeing which film will be victorious. Until then, please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your pods. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram and TikTok, where we are at ClashPod. Till Thursday, have a great week.
Clash of the Titles is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
The championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with the second tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search Second Tier in your podcast app
and hit subscribe.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.